Nadia Bolz Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Wait, oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Bozeman. Wait, wait, hey, 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 Mr. Bozeman. Mr. Bozeman, look and see. Oh yeah.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We've got email to respond to and the Issues Etc. comment line. The email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the comment line, 618-223-8382. After about a half hour of listener email in the comment line, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us for the conclusion of our two-part series on Psalm 82.
For the record, was it Monday? I went to visit my good, faithful Lutheran Edwardsville, Illinois eye doctor, Dr. Eigenbrot, because I'm a poor reader anyway, but my vision has diminished, and I was right.
It's getting worse.
It's getting worse. But the solution was new lenses at around $250. Not lenses, not the frames.
That seems wrong to me.
Only to learn that my daughter needs new contacts. So Emily will be getting new contacts. Dad will be staying with these eyeglasses till the parousia.
Yeah, the glasses I'm wearing right now are about 17 years old. Same prescription. My eyes have gotten a lot worse. And I have gotten new glasses in the meantime. I lost one, I don't know, when I was traveling, one pair. So I came back to these. And then I went and got another pair. And the bottom part of the bifocals was just so wrong for what I do, which is sit in front of a screen all day long. So I never wear them. So I'm like with a 17-year-old prescription here. I'm probably seriously damaging my eyes every single day. And I keep saying, I'm going to go get some more glasses, some new glasses. But it's too many other things to do.
We're in the process of job evaluations. That was going to be one of my recommendations for you to go see your local eye doctor.
Really?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because I thought it would help your reading. I thought maybe you had problems reading like I did, and I was going to blame it on your vision.
I do most of my reading through the bottom of the bifocals, which is still fine. It's the top. You should be worried about my driving, where I'm looking at the distance. Because the bottom of the bifocal still is great for reading.
Those 17-year-old glasses you have now, they look like Colonel Klink's monocle in Hogan's Heroes, like two of them.
I've been wearing these glasses for years and years and years, and for some reason people are just now noticing it. I mean, I've been wearing these for almost two decades, and people are just now noticing them.
I see nothing. Ready for some email? Yeah. That was my impersonation, a very poor impersonation of Sergeant Schultz.
Yeah, that was
pathetic. No more impersonation, Schwartz. All right, Nancy, Melbourne, Florida. I've been following the LCMS Youth Gathering on Facebook. Who runs this? What's the purpose? Seeing Toby Mac as the opening act confused me. Is the goal to make Lutheran young people evangelicals? Our church sent several youth, and that is making it increasingly uncomfortable to me. Thanks for any clarification that you can provide. And thank you for listening in Melbourne, Florida, Nancy.
First of all, I do have to ask before I get to Nancy's question. Jeff, do you wear bifocals? I've never noticed.
I do, but I don't know how to use them. To me, the lower one is supposed to be for reading, correct?
Uh-huh.
But it's the exact opposite. I think they reversed my prescription. I can see better farther away with the lower part. And I think it's supposed to be the opposite way.
Something's wrong.
It's probably my brain. I probably need to see a neurologist.
That could be too. All right, so Nancy's question. LCMS Youth runs the National Youth Gathering. It's an event that is put on every 3 years. And it is, oh, it will bring in between 20 and may say 35,000 kids, depending on the year that they hold it. So it is an official LCMS function. The youth department essentially exists almost solely to produce the youth gathering. It's one gigantic event. I think it's about a week long. It spans a weekend. It has dozens of speakers and events. It has entertainment. It has service projects for the kids. They go do things. They collect money. I think this year they collected $1 million plus and did hours and hours and hours of community service where they were holding the event. So it's an official LCMS thing. I share many of your concerns about the current state of the LCMS youth gathering. In particular, the de facto kind of confusion between what is worship and what is what they call a mass event. But let me give you a little bit of perspective. It is so much better than it used to be. It used to be kind of just a free-for-all for the youth that had tons of non-Lutheran speakers. They weren't too concerned about whether someone was preaching or speaking. There were beach balls being bounced around during the distribution of the Lord's Supper in the down on the floor of the wherever they were meeting, and just kind of general irreverence being encouraged. So that stuff has been curtailed. They've tried to make a more distinction between when the kids are worshiping and when they are essentially being entertained or playing. To get that many teenagers together, you have to entertain them in some way. They're so easily bored because of their limited brain capacity. They just need to be entertained a lot. So I understand the entertainment, but the distinction between entertainment and worship is a work in progress. The organizers make that distinction. I think that for the most part, the speakers make that distinction. I don't think that the kids are really making the distinction between worship and a mass event. You ask the question, are they training future evangelicals? Are they trying to make these kids into evangelicals? Giving them the benefit of the doubt, I don't think the organizers are trying to do that. Are they doing it? Yes, they are. They still are by blurring the distinction or allowing a blurring of a distinction between worship and entertainment at that so-called mass event. Here's part of the problem. For a lot of these kids, the churches that they go to on Sunday morning, what happens on Sunday morning is what happens in the worship service. But for a lot of other kids who go to this thing, what happens for them on Sunday morning when they go to church is what happens at the mass event. The band plays, someone gets up and says something inspirational for about 45 minutes, and the band plays their skits and things like that. That's their Sunday morning. Whereas for other kids, their Sunday morning is what's happening in the worship service, the liturgy. So it's really the collision of two worlds where trying to make the distinction between the band playing, a speaker saying something inspirational for 45 minutes, and then the band playing with a little prayer scattered in there. That's a mass event. More than half the kids in that who are gathered there are saying, no, that's what I see on Sunday morning as worship. This is worship. What that person said was the sermon, not their talk, not their teaching, not their presentation. So, in effect, we are planting the seeds for these kids to become evangelicals. And so I share that concern, but it has been much improved. It still has a long way to go. With the re-election of Pastor Harrison as president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the improvement will continue. He is concerned about that. He wants to see it improved. But the National Youth Gathering is like an big ocean-going tanker. It can change course, but it changes course very slowly, and it changes course over time. So don't expect miracles. Now, I should say that about almost 20 years ago now, some concerned pastors and lay people got together precisely because they couldn't take their kids to the National Youth Gathering. It used to be just awful, okay? Bad. And they couldn't take their kids to it. They wanted a real Lutheran youth event. And they formed an organization called Higher Things. Started out small. It's gotten bigger every year. They hold summer conferences. They're up to what, Jeff, now 5 summer conferences that are regional. On any given summer, they're nowhere near the numbers of the National Youth Gathering, but of course they're holding it every year, and they're holding them all over the country. So, and they were concerned about making this basic distinction. I remember Clem Preuss, who used to be the president of Higher Things, saying, when we worship, we worship. When we work. And when we play. And we keep those 3 things distinct. I've spoken at Higher Things. Jeff has served on the board, 2 times at least? Lynn, who's in the other office here, was in on the ground floor in a technical capacity with Higher Things, and I think served on the board as well. So we send our kids, not my personal kids, but kids from our congregation to Higher Things. They just came back from Higher Things. And that distinction of worship, work, and play is very important. And the kids learn it really well. So when they worship, they worship, and they worship from the hymnal. They're not trying to undermine what is happening at these kids' congregations. And when they work, they get out and they do the service projects. And when they play, they just have a good time. They don't try and mix those things up. So that's still an ongoing concern. There's room for improvement in the National Youth Gathering. A lot of room for improvement. Will it ever be that sharp distinction? I don't know. You know, sometimes these things take on a character of their own, a life of their own. On the other side of the hour, we'll continue responding to our listeners' email and our Issues Etc. comment line. Then it will be the conclusion of part 2 of our series on Psalm 82 with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer.
I ain't got time to take no faster. Oh, the lonely days are gone. I'm coming home. Well, my baby, she wrote me a letter.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.
Nadia Bowles Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Well, did you get my message? Ooh, did you get my message?
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line.
Next, Paul Alexander of Virginia writes, why is the crucifixion associated with Passover and not Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement?
It is actually associated with both. In the Gospels, especially the Gospel of John, it's strongly associated with the Passover. Of course, John has that image of Jesus being the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. So he is again and again kind of associated with the Paschal lamb. John makes the point that Jesus is betrayed on the very night when the Paschal lambs are being sacrificed in preparation for the Passover. And that's the association, John's gospel. There's also just the chronological association that Jesus is crucified. He is sacrificed at the Passover. That's about as clear an indication that what he's doing there at the cross is the fulfillment of what the Jews had been practicing since the Exodus by God's command in the Passover meal. So there's that strong association, quite obvious. But there is the Yom Kippur association in Scripture too, and you find that in the book of Hebrews, where the writer to the Hebrews explicitly walks us through the Day of Atonement when the high priest enters the Holy of Holies with the blood of the sacrifice and makes atonement for the sins of all the people, for himself and all the people. And he equates that high priest with Jesus himself. And he speaks about the crucifixion as that sacrifice once for all that fulfills the Day of Atonement and fulfills the entire sacrificial system of the Old Testament. That's what all of it was pointing forward to do. And he speaks about that in terms of the substance and the shadow. The shadow was the Old Testament sacrificial system, in particular, the Day of Atonement, the once-for-all sacrifice. The substance is Christ himself. So there's a double association. You can actually make the association with Jesus' crucifixion with a lot of the different sacrifices, and Scripture does, with whole burnt offerings, so that the sacrifice is entirely consumed in the sacrificial fire. It's not just a sacrifice of blood, but it's a sacrifice of blood that is then burned. So they make that association. There are other connections between Jesus and the priesthood made in the book of Hebrews. But Jesus, of course, in the book of Hebrews is a priest of a different order than the priestly line of the Old Testament. Because, of course, Jesus is not of the line that would have made him a priest. He is a priest of a unique order, as the writer to the Hebrews says, a priest according to the order of Melchizedek, that priest out of the Old Testament who encountered Abraham and received a tithe from Abraham and gave gifts to Abraham. So there are a lot of associations, but the big ones are the Day of Atonement in the book of Hebrews and the Passover, the way the Gospels frame the crucifixion.
This is Herman calling commenting on your gift and this presentation today by Dr. James Edwards and his book on Professor Ernst Lohmeyer of the University of Breslau and what happened to him under the Nazi and the communist regimes. This is a most important opening of further history of that era that's badly needed. I have access to a copy of Lowell C. Green's book by Concordia Publishing, 2007, Lutherans Against Hitler, which goes then that direction. This work adds to that, while in the names index of Lutherans Against Hitler, Ernst Lohmeyer's name is not found. Nevertheless, Dr. Edwards is presenting a very vital and needed historical update. In this period, we're looking back on the opening of files regarding various events around World War II, before, during, and after, that are now becoming available for research. And new material is turning up, and he appears to have done this. I think it's very welcome that we get a larger picture beyond what could be described as in what's being the popularized Dietrich Bonhoeffer-Rudolf Bultmann connection there, and whatever the various contentions go around that, that we need a larger picture of this period and the role of the church's witness led by this Lutheran pastor and professor who was focused in ability and accomplishment on the original languages of Scripture, Latin, Aramaic, Greek, and Hebrew, and original sources. Be interesting to further explore that and see that the book is offered now as a feature for the month. It's very important to open this up and get a bigger and deeper, wider and more informed picture of this era, and it allows to play down stereotypes and bring in historical facts and greater perspective. So that was very significant to have that aired. Thank you very much.
Well, we were happy to do that. And yes, it's a fascinating book called Between the Swastika and the Sickle by Dr. James Edwards, and had the privilege of being able to interview him on that. The fact of the matter is a lot of the records, and there are tons of records that I'm sure are waiting to be explored by scholars, were behind the Iron Curtain for a long time, because Germany was essentially divided between East and West. And yes, the wall did come down in 1989, but these things take time to recover. So we've learned the ending of some stories that we didn't know before. We are sometimes left with the impression, I think, that it was just kind of Corrie ten Boom, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and a couple other Christians under Nazi occupation who stood up, and the rest of them just all completely capitulated. At least reading that book Between the Swastika and the Sickle, it's quite evident that while there were these, quote, German Christians, that's what they called themselves, German Christians, who were essentially kind of the Nazi wing of the church or the churchly wing of the Nazi party, there were many Christians who wanted nothing to do with that, who suffered, as did Ernst Lohmeyer, suffered greatly because of their refusal to cooperate either with the Nazis or later with the Soviets. So there's kind of just a dead zone of history there that is awaiting scholars who have the time and the wherewithal to go and actually read the original documents and say, oh, this is what happened. So that we don't have this very oversimplified view that, well, in Germany, all the Lutherans just became Nazis one day. They just decided, oh, Hitler's now the chancellor. I guess we're going to become Nazis, and except for a few. But that's absolutely not true. There were those who capitulated. The reason Nazism caught on is because a lot of people really believed what Hitler was selling. They really did believe it, but a lot of people really didn't believe it, too.
Ben's from Lake Charles, Louisiana, and he asks, will Issues Etc. broadcast from the upcoming Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Convention in Tampa? My wife and I will be there and are fans of your show. Thanks, and may God bless you and your work. Thank you for listening in, Louisiana, Ben.
Yes, we are making a very quick trip down to Tampa this coming weekend. Jeff and I are going to fly down on Saturday, and then we will be broadcasting live Sunday night, probably about 7 o'clock, right at the time of what they call the ice cream social. Jeff's doing all the logistics right now to make sure that we're where we need to be in this big convention space. We're going to be on the third floor. Sounds like a series of balconies to me, overlooking a big open space where people are going to be eating ice cream and shaking hands with President Harrison.
We've done this, the last two conventions we've broadcast outside the extremely popular and well-attended ice cream social sponsored by Lutheran Church Extension Fund. We love you, Bart Day.
Yeah.
And we will be this year as well. We are going to be on the outside of Central Hall on the third floor. The ice cream social is on the second floor.
But we'll be overlooking it somehow.
But we'll be overlooking it.
Okay. And there's going to be drum band playing somewhere nearby.
On the first floor.
Okay.
On the first floor. So if you attend the extremely popular, well-attended, triennial ice cream social sponsored by We Love You, Bart Day, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, look up, somewhere up towards the heavens.
There will be.
We shall be there.
We'll do a two-hour broadcast. And
no guest scheduled.
We don't have the guest scheduled. It's kind of a embarrassment of riches when it comes to guests and when you go down to the LCMS convention because there's so many people gathered in one place, but we'll probably do a series of interviews there. It might be more than 2 hours. It depends on how sleepy I get. And then we're leaving. We want nothing more to do with the inner workings of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod than we have to. It's not that we don't have any interest. It's just that we have no reason to stick around after the broadcast is over. So we'll be leaving Monday, if I'm right.
Yes.
We're not leaving Sunday night, are we?
No.
Okay.
No. Deaconess Fredrickson has scheduled us to fly Saturday. I think we arrive in Tampa around 1:30, and then we leave sometime on Monday.
We did one in Houston back in the dark days.
In 2007.
And
from the Hilton lobby.
Little did we know that we were within 6-7 months of being fired. But we went down to the Hilton of the lobby of the Hilton. Right by the bar, it was a perfect location, people coming and going up and down the elevators. And I remember we had Dr. Paul Meyer. I don't know what we were talking about, but we did an interview with him. And when the crowd started to form, he just kind of, started playing to the crowd. He's a great communicator. He started playing to the crowd, and it was great radio, too. But I do remember walking back from that live broadcast with all of our equipment in tow. It wasn't that late at night, but Houston just kind of shuts down. It was about 110 degrees and about 100% humidity. Jeff and I were trying to find our way back to our hotel on foot.
With a couple $1,000s worth of equipment.
Yeah, and it was heavy too. And we were kind of rolling it along the sidewalks of downtown Houston. And we ended up getting lost. And then a police cruiser pulls up next to us and says, "You guys should not be out on the streets at this time of night in this neighborhood."
We said this was the highest, like, per capita crime in all of Houston.
And again, we're carrying like $8,000 worth of equipment with us. We're both in like
suits,
our suits, sweating profusely.
Saying, rob us.
So he put our stuff in his trunk and let us sit in the back. Most uncomfortable ride I've ever taken in my life. I had no idea that police cars were that uncomfortable in the back. There's no leg room whatsoever. And took us back to our hotel and dropped us off. And he was disgusted with this. He just thought we were complete and total idiots. But didn't you call his supervisor to thank him?
I sent an email to the chief of police and he responded and said the officer would be commended. And I mean, almost like instantaneously.
Yeah, he probably saved our lives. Who knows? Yes. He probably saved our lives. That's all I remember from that Houston trip. And I don't remember any of the other live broadcasts.
My personal highlight of our Sunday night broadcast from LCMS Convention, and I've been doing these since I met my beloved wife at the 95 Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Convention, when it was at the TWA Dome. Is that what they called it, Craigie? The downtown St. Louis? Personal. So we get fired in 2010. 2013, we're outside the Ice Cream Social in St. Louis. The Reverend Dr. Gerald Kieschnick, whose administration was responsible for our cancellations and firings, walked by while we're doing a live broadcast. And just gave him a slow,
big old wave.
Papal wave. One more email.
I'm sure he was like, "What are they doing here? I thought I ended that."
We're back. Yeah. One more. Michelle, she says she lives in Chicagoland.
All right.
She said, "I was listening to the comment line from July 8th regarding the discussion about the two Catholic documents. Your comment that Christians need not live with a defeatist attitude, that the Holy Spirit who lives in us is indeed God, really struck me. I've heard it said before that if God were ever going to leave us in our despair, it would have been in Gethsemane. I appreciate you reminding us that if God could change us from his enemy to a believer in him, then of course he can effect any type of change in us. This also brings to mind God's promise, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.' Also, thanks for referencing the Lutheran Confession so often on your show. It's unbelievable to me how many Lutherans have never cracked the book. I really enjoy the Issues Etc. comment line. Keep up the good work. Thanks for listening in Chicagoland, Michelle."
Michelle, thank you very much. Happy to do it. Look, I agree. It is shocking and really, it should not be tolerated that we have, I'll start with pastors. We have Lutheran pastors who don't make regular use and study of the Lutheran confessions. It is their confession. It is what they have vowed to believe, to teach, to confess, and to practice. And that they don't, or they're ignorant of what is in them, is completely unacceptable. And if they're ignorant of them, then certainly their people will be ignorant of them because they won't be teaching and confessing what's in there. And they'll probably be making up some stuff of their own. They'll just be flying by the seat of their pants, which is why you can talk to people and say, "What are you? I'm a Lutheran." But then you quickly discover in conversation that they really don't believe much of anything that Lutherans actually believe. How could that be? Well, it's not their fault. It's their pastor's fault. Their pastor has not done what he vowed to do at his ordination, which is to conform all of his teaching and his ministry to the Lutheran confessions. That means he's got to know them. He should know them as well as he knows the Bible, because they are the lens through which the Bible is to be read for Lutherans. And he should be able to teach them, and his people should know them insofar as they're able to absorb that teaching. They should know them as well, so that when you say, "I'm a Lutheran," it actually means something. I've just been writing about this for the upcoming Issues Etc. journal. I think we are almost entirely unique as confessional Lutherans in that we have, if someone says, "What do you believe?" we can point to the Book of Concord, 1580 Book of Concord, and say, "This is what I believe." I don't think there's any other Christian denomination or confession of faith that can do that, point to a single source and say, this is what we believe, what we teach, and what we confess. There are lots of confessional Christians out there who have various confessions, but they kind of pick and choose among them, or they go with one or with another. It is only confessional Lutherans that can say, that Book of Concord is what I believe, teach, and confess. And if you say that, then you ought to know what it teaches. It isn't rocket science. It's long, but that's why we've been doing our series with Pastor Paul McCain on the Lutheran Confessions, trying to bring it to both our listeners who are lay people, who should be being taught these things, and to their pastors. When we come back, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us to talk about Psalm 82. If you appreciate Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
Emmanuel Press is a Lutheran-owned business in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in operation since 2004. That's 15 years of publishing liturgical and devotional books, 15 years of collaborating with Lutheran authors, artists, and translators. Thanks to our loyal customers and Issues Etc., we look forward to many more years of confessing and teaching the Christian faith. Visit us online at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L press.us.
Confessional Lutherans, we've got your back. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The LCMS mission in Gambia is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During July, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to the LCMS mission in Gambia. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.